Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
The biggest mistake I made when I started investing was not properly educating myself on landlord insurance. I just went with the cheapest quote and I didn't know what I was doing. Several years later, when my HVAC system went out, I found out I didn't have the proper coverage, so I had to pay for the entire thing out of pocket. Issues will happen as an investor, and it's important to make sure you're properly insured to protect your investment. Steadily's coverage is low cost, and they pride themselves on providing excellent service. Click the link below to get your free landlord insurance quote today. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 148. Few quick announcements before we get into this week's episode. If you haven't already, definitely make sure you subscribe, make sure you leave that 5-star rating and review. Helps us out a whole lot and it only takes a moment. So I look forward to hearing from you. Also, the networking event and panel that I'm doing in LA on December 17th is officially sold out. We sold out in about a week. So if you were hoping to come and you did not make it and you didn't sign up in time, definitely look out for the next one. Also, wherever you are, if you want me to do an event in your city, host a panel, host an event, definitely send me a message or an email. Let me know, and I look forward to hearing from you. This episode was amazing. We learned about a brand new strategy that we haven't covered on the show before, how to invest in self-storage facilities. So without further ado, let's get into it.
All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Before we jump in, definitely make sure that you subscribe, that you like, leave us a 5-star rating and review. Helps us out a lot, helps us to reach more people. So thank you in advance for that. All right, here with me, I have Rashad Newworlds out of Pennsylvania by way of Brooklyn, fellow Brooklynite. Ramel, thank you so much for jumping on the show. Really appreciate it.
Yes. I appreciate you for having me. I'm excited to be able to share this platform with you, man. I'm super duper excited.
Definitely. Brooklyn in the house.
You know how we do. Brooklyn heavy. Yeah, baby. We got to represent.
Yes, sir. All right. So, Ramel, for those who don't may not know who you are, what you do, just give everybody a quick overview of who you are and what you do.
Yes. My name is Ramel Newworlds, 30 years old, been in the real estate business for the last 8 years. I'm born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. So, you know, my story is like anybody else. You know, so you know, growing up in Brooklyn, welfare, food stamps, free lunch, all of that, you name it. I wanted to go to the NBA. That was my first dream, to go to the NBA. Right? It didn't happen. Then I started rapping. I'm putting out music on SoundCloud and YouTube. That didn't work. Then I found myself in the street selling weed and trying to just do every single thing to make some money. And then I found real estate, you know, and real estate was just perfect for me to be able to get into. And I went on my path, started this business, built up a $4 million portfolio before the age of 30. And now I'm just excited to be able to share my journey and help other people get to that same place that I'm at now.
Love it. So yeah. Storage facilities. I know that is one of your main specialty right now. And it's something that I never really heard about till I heard you speaking about it. Yeah. And I'm sure for a lot of people, it's the same thing. So how in the world did you get into storage facilities? Because, you know, obviously growing up in the city, we see these things around. We probably have even used them, our family and stuff. But I personally never thought of it as like an investment or real estate or anything like that. So how did you get into it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I started out in real estate 8 years ago. I'll kind of give you my very first deal and how it got to this point. I like to give the full scope because you got to understand how it happened. So I started out 2015, it was about 2015, and I found a two-family brownstone in Brooklyn. So you know, you from Brooklyn, you know the price of the brownstones and what they go for, but it was a motivated seller that was going through a pre-foreclosure. I ended up marketing, sending letters, cold calling. I got the property under contract for $590,000, right? At that time, I was working for Pepsi as a sales rep. I was only making $55,000 a year, so I didn't qualify for a mortgage of that magnitude. So they denied me, and I would go to a bunch of different meetups. So I would go on Eventbrite, I would type in real estate meetups, and I would go to these meetups and bring my business cards. I would introduce myself. I started wearing suits, right? I was really, you know, trying to get to this next level, and I needed somebody to give me an opportunity. And by the grace of God, I ended up connecting with a lady who was old enough to be my grandmother, right? You know, a Black lady, she's a broker. She owned a bunch of buildings in the city. And I show her this opportunity and she said, I want to help you out. I see something in you. You remind me of my son. So she ended up connecting me to another guy who became my capital partner. So I showed him the deal. He put up the entire $590,000 for me. I put no money out of my pocket. I just had to give him 50% equity in the deal. So that same property we purchased, we put about $40,000 in renovations, sold it for $1.2 million. I made six figures in real estate, my very first deal. So like that was just a home run, right? And typically nobody starts their real estate journeys that way. And I got excited. I got money now. And I continue to just build up this portfolio. I bought another property and another property, another property to where I had about 40 units in 2020. But we all know what happened in 2020, the pandemic, right? So now the pandemic has happened. Tenants stopped paying. I had a good amount of tenants stop paying their rent. About 40% of the tenants that I had stopped paying their rent. So I'm stuck with the water, the insurance, the mortgage, the taxes, and my cash flow is not coming in as it once was. So just to be completely transparent with you, I was debt heavy, but cash poor. And I had to figure out a way to pivot. So I'm brainstorming, I'm looking to adapt. And then I started thinking maybe I could sell off some of my assets because the market is sky high. You know, people paying over asking price, interest rates are low, so I can liquidate, right? So I started selling off some of my properties. And one particular property, I had a buyer that was willing to offer me $20,000 more than what I was asking. He just had one stipulation. He said he wanted the property vacant. So I went, I offered cash for keys, right? I gave the tenant $2,000. I said, hey, I don't care. You don't need to pay me back anything. Just leave. Here go $2,000. He had one condition. Can you put my items in a storage unit for 90 days and I'll accept your offer? We agreed. I tried to find a storage unit in my area. Everything was sold out. Everything was booked up. I couldn't find anything. And that's when a light bulb went off. I said, I need to be on this side of the business. What's going on? Why is it there? There's no units available. I started YouTubing, Googling, researching. I ended up coming across a mastermind. I paid $25,000 to join this mastermind, flew out to Arizona all by myself, and I learned this entirely new world of self-storage. And then I purchased my first self-storage facility, 88-unit facility, and it was just game over from there because now I'm making money in the business without dealing with tenants living in my units, no trash, no toilets, no plumbing. And really, it was just the best kept secret. So that's how it happened for me.
Wow. We definitely have a lot to unpack. Wow. All right. So I got a whole bunch of questions before we get into the self-storage piece. So you mentioned when you found the deal in New York, you didn't have the capital, but you went to these networking events and you were able to find a partner. And one is one key that you mentioned. You were willing to give up 50% equity since, you know, you had a capital partner who was able to, you know, pay for the rehab and all that stuff before it's sold. Most people don't want to share anything. Most people don't want to split anything. So at that early stage, like, what was it for you that gave you the foresight? Like, hey, you know what? I can still make something if I partner with somebody who can provide the capital.
That's a great question. And it boils down to mentorship, right? Because originally I didn't want to give up 50% equity. I'm going to be honest with you, right? I found a deal. I'm like, I could make $1 million. You know, I don't want to give nobody anything of what I work for, but my mentor who connected me to the capital partner, she kept telling me in real estate, if you really want to go far, you cannot worry about what other people's making. You cannot worry about other people's pockets. You just need to know what you bring to the table and what you can get on a return by bringing what you have to the table, right? And that's really what helped me understand. If I didn't have the hurt in my ear, that mentor, you know, I probably would have just, you know, ran straight to the ground, to be honest with you.
Definitely. And it also sounds like over the years prior to the shift to the storage facility, you were able to also scale your portfolio. Was that within New York City?
No. So I actually went upstate New York, Albany. So that's where I went to school. Mm-hmm. I went to school SUNY Albany, upstate New York, and I went to buy some properties out that way. And then I went out to Pennsylvania, Milwaukee. I started spreading out because I could get more bang for my buck out of town, out of state. I just used New York City as my hub to get started because that's who I was born and raised.
Got it. That makes sense. And it sounds like you did have a turning point. You mentioned, you know, you were able to expand your portfolio and you just ran into a situation where you weren't getting the rents that you were before the pandemic. And again, a lot of people would not have been willing to sell. As a matter of fact, some people don't think you should ever sell real estate. So I'd love to hear more of your thoughts on that and your opinion on that.
Yeah, that's a great question, right? So I didn't want to sell. My original thought process was to hold my properties for long-term purposes, cash flow, get the benefits that way. But we have to be prepared for the real estate cycles, right? We know that things happen, and every couple of years, we're going to see things that we need to adapt. And I seen that at that time, I was able to make 2 and 3 times more than what I paid for a property. Why not sell it so I can take my profits and reinvest into something different? And that's exactly what I did. If I didn't sell my properties, I wouldn't have had the capital to go and buy a self-storage facility and continue to build in a different segment of real estate.
Love it. Love it. That makes a lot of sense. And I mean, you know, sometimes, to your point, you got to know when to pivot. And it can be to our detriment to be so stubborn to not recognize like when it's time to, you know, make a move and do something else. And I think the important thing you mentioned is taking the money and reinvesting it into somewhere else. I mean, the majority of people will just take that money and go to Vegas or go to the Bahamas or something and just waste it on liabilities. But it sounds like you had the foresight to move the money to something else that could generate income.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've always been a forward thinker, you know, even since I was younger, playing basketball, rapping, I always think what's next for me. You know, I'm the type of person, I get bored really fast. So if something is not like serving me, I got to find something new, right? It could be a gift from the curse because I'm always doing something else, but I've always been a forward thinker.
Love it. Love it. All right. So storage facility, let's break down just that first deal. Like you had the light bulb moment, you had a tenant who needed storage, you couldn't find anything. And you're like, all right, I need to get into this. What did that look like trying to get into it after having attended that mastermind and just trying to get the ball rolling?
What's funny is most people think this hard. It's actually easier to buy a self-storage facility than a single family house, right? It's actually an easier process because the lender, specifically the SBA, is not looking at you as a person, right? When you're buying commercial real estate, they're looking at the asset. They're looking at the facility, the property. Is this facility bringing in enough income to cover the debt on this facility, right? And I used a vehicle called the SBA 7A loan, which is specifically designed for self-storage investors. So if you're a newbie investor, they will qualify you up to 90%. So I only needed to come to the table with 10% down. So that's really, that was a beautiful thing. And I wouldn't have known this if I didn't pay $25,000 to go to a mentorship, to go to a mastermind. So that also made the process easier by having the resources and information and people around me to say, hey, here go the contacts, right? Here's who you reach out to. This is what the process looks like. And when I found this facility on LoopNet, so I just went on LoopNet, found the facility, found the broker. The broker ended up bringing all the information, the tax returns, the P&Ls, all the different financial reports that the lender requests. The broker was able to provide it to me. So it was a pretty much simple process. And I came to the table with a little under $100,000. And I was able to, you know, just roll that money over from the profits of me selling off my assets, you know, a few of my properties.
Got you. So SBS, Small Business Administration, right?
Yes.
Gotcha. So when you were looking at this particular storage facility, what are the numbers that you're analyzing? Because obviously, you know, with residential, you're looking at cash flow, mortgage, tax insurance, whatever. What does that look like on the self-storage side?
It's the same approach. It's just that it's a different product, right? But you still want to look at it as a business. So one of the things I'm always going to look at is called my cash on cash return. So how much return do I have on the money that I'm putting out? Me personally, I like to have a 20% cash on cash return, which means I want to make the money that I put out, I want to make it back within 5 years, at least the money that I put out of my own pocket, right? So that's number one. I want to see what is my cash on cash return. Number two, I want to look at the supply index. So a supply index would determine if a facility has a demand or not, because I could buy a facility in an area that's dying, where there's nobody even renting out units. But if I buy a facility, for example, Florida is a booming market because so many people from up north is moving down there because it's cheaper living, you know, no taxes and stuff like that. So the population is increasing. Self-storage facilities are being developed all over Florida because the population is increasing. As people are moving, they need a place to store their items. So what I'm going to do to get that supply index, I'll get a facility within a 5-mile radius and I will get how many units is available. I mean, how many total units within that 5-mile radius, right? Once I get that total amount of units, let's say it's 1,000 units, I'm now going to divide that by the total population within that 5-mile radius. And when I divide that number, it should be 7% or below. If it's 7% or below, then I'm interested in buying. If it's 7% or above, that means I probably don't want to touch it because if I buy it, it's not a demand. Like, where's the people? Where's the schools? Where's the institutions, right? I want to know what businesses are growing or happening or developing around the self-storage facility.
Gotcha. So it sounds like you shouldn't just find, you know, see one on LoopNet or whatever you're finding and call and try to make an offer. It's important to do the market research. It's important to, you know, look at the data, the cash flow percentages, all those things before you even try to make an offer.
Correct. Because you'll buy a bad asset, you know, so you want to make sure the numbers make sense. You want to do the market research to understand, you know, is there a demand? You also want to look at the median income, right? If this is a low poverty, you know, type of area, if I can't afford my rent where I'm staying and laying my head, what's the likelihood of me affording to pay for a storage unit, right? Like, you got to think about it. So these are the things we want to focus on and understand. So the market research is so important because you will buy something that, you know, don't make sense and then you stuck with an asset that you got debt on.
Definitely. That makes sense. So you close on your first self-storage facility. Mm-hmm. What was the process after that? Like you got the keys and everything and it's yours. Like what did you do next? Like, how did you get it up and running? Like, how did you manage it?
So it was actually a turnkey facility. So I pretty much just bought an income stream, kept everything in place. The only thing that I changed was the branding on the website, right? So put a new name on the website. But as far as the employees, everybody, I kept everything in place. The management company kept it in place. But one of the things that I love about self-storage, right? I don't need to have anybody that work inside the facility, especially with the 88 unit one. Another one that I have some people that work the facility, but that first one, when I started, I have it fully automated where you go online and you could book your unit online, you'll pay, and then you'll get an email and you'll get your code. You go punch your code into the gate and you can go directly to your unit. And I have VAs that watch the cameras 24/7, but there's nobody that works the unit. It's pretty hands-off, it's automated. So you just now have more time to focus on other endeavors.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. You said the first one was 88 units?
88 units, yeah.
Got it. How do you figure out how much to charge for the units and like this, and are they all the same size at that location? How does that part of it work?
Yeah, let me take it back. So the way you determine whether or not you're going to charge $90, $100, $200 is based upon the market. So let's think about LA, right? Mm-hmm. A 2-bedroom in LA, how much is that go for?
Man, let's say over 2000, over 2000.
Over $2,000. So $2,500 for a 2-bedroom in LA, right? But a 2-bedroom in Ohio is probably $700, $800, $900. So because of the market, it determines what you can charge. So it's the same thing when it comes to a self-storage facility. If I have a self-storage facility in New York City, LA, I'm going to charge more because that's what the market details, right? But I'm going to look at the competition. So I'm going to look at all the facilities within a 5-mile radius, and I'm going to call them up as a secret shopper. And I'm going to say, hey, how much are you charging for a 10x10 unit? And if they tell me they're charging $90, then I know that's probably what the market is telling us, right? And I'm going to call the next one. If the next one say they're charging $100, whatever the highest price that the competitors are charging, that's where I want to be. I want to be where the highest price of whatever the competitors are charging in my market.
Love it. And this first facility, was this in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, Pennsylvania. Yep.
Got it. So you did mention this one is like pretty hands-off. You have VAs watching the cameras and it's pretty easy if you want to get into one of these facilities. What happens if someone doesn't pay? Like, you know, I know obviously with like tenants who are living in a place, you could go through the eviction process, all that. How simple is it to get somebody out if they're not paying for a certain period of time?
That's what I love about self-storage, right? Because we go by lien laws and not eviction laws. When you own rental properties, you go by eviction laws. So now you got the courts, you got to get people out. It's this whole headache. With the self-storage, I put a lien on your unit. So it's not people living there, it's only items. So if you owe me, I'm going to send you a 30-day notice that you know that you're behind. When you don't respond, if you don't pay, now I'm going to call and hire an auction company to come in. So now the auction company comes in and they set up the process and schedule an auction. I'm not sure if you ever looked up Storage Wars on YouTube. You ever Googled that?
No, I've never heard of it.
So do it when you have some downtime, go Google Storage Wars. And it's actual people who wait for these auctions and they go and bid on units because you never know what's in it, right? You might find some good stuff in it, but we're going to sell off the unit and whatever the profits is from that unit, I'm going to pull back whatever I'm owed. So I'm pretty much almost guaranteed to get my money back unless the unit, you know, is auctioned off for less than what I'm owed. Then I'm pretty much got to take that loss. But most of the times, you know, we'll be able to get our money back by putting a lien on the items.
Got it. And I imagine it's not nearly as much maintenance as, you know, multifamily home or something like that. What does that part of it look like as far as just maintaining the property?
So it depends on where you buy. So in Pennsylvania, we have snow removal, right? Because it snows a lot in the wintertime. So we have to pay to do that. Your taxes, insurance, upkeeping with my security system, making sure that the electronic gates work. So just keeping that maintained. And that's pretty much it. You know, for the most part, we don't have to deal with plumbing, kitchen, a bunch of different electrical things. No, we don't have to deal with that. So for the most part, it's just maintaining the actual grounds, you know, whether it's making sure that we shovel or the ground is paved, the doors and the roofs that last 30, 40 years. So once we replace the doors and the roofs, we don't got to worry about it for a very long time. So that's pretty much what it looks like from a management standpoint and expense standpoint.
Got it. What were some challenges you faced with that first facility as you're getting your feet wet and investing in a completely different type, kind of asset? Were there any challenges and things you really had to learn?
Yeah, I did. I had to learn that the name of the game is turnover, right? It's different when it comes to self-storage because when you have let's say you own a rental property, the name of the game is stability. You want to get a tenant in there that pays and they just stay and they quiet, right? But with self-storage, you want to keep turnover because if I have a facility that's 100% occupied, now my income is stabilized because it's occupied. I can't get no new people in there and I'm stuck. So what I like to do is once I hit a point where I'm fully occupied, I'm going to increase the rent. So I can give you a 30-day notice that I'm going to increase the rent. Once I increase the rent, if people leave, now I could get somebody in off the street and charge them a higher price. I didn't understand that when I first started and I was wondering why I was pretty much just stagnant, right? And the cost of goods go up. And one negative thing about the SBA is that it is not a fixed rate. So based upon the market and the interest rate, your interest rates will go up. So out of nowhere, you can get a letter stating that your mortgage is going up a couple $100, right? But your cash flow is still the same. So you always want to be flexible and hedge against inflation, interest rates. And I didn't understand that when I first started, but now I have the proper procedures in place to make sure that I can always keep some units available so that I can always keep a pulse on the market and hedge against inflation and keep my income going up and raising the most value of my facility.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. With the SBA, what's the long term? Like, how long is that?
It's 20 to 30 years. It depends, but typically anywhere from 20 to 30 years as far as like how the term of the loan. The interest rates, obviously, it's based upon the market, right? At that time, I had a 4.25 interest rate, which was really good. You pay a 2 points on the loan, which is called a guarantee fee because the SBA is guaranteeing a loan. It's similar to FHA, you know, where you got to have the private mortgage insurance for the FHA. You have a guarantee fee. Well, that's pretty much it. It's a smooth process. What I will say is that they do require a business plan. So they want to see what is your plan with this facility? You know, how are you going to increase the rents? How are you going to make this more attractable? And this is what I like to teach, right? I want to give you some game on how you could take one, because I teach a lot of my mentees, we need to work higher, not harder. Like we get it confused where you say, oh, I got to work harder. No, you really just got to work higher, work above the business. So instead of me going and buying 10 single families a year, you know, 10 duplexes, and I'm continuously in this race, all I need to do is buy one storage facility per year and it could crush 10 single families, right? Or 10 duplexes or triplexes. And the reason why is because I add multiple streams of income on that one facility. So what I did was I realized that a lot of people that was renting out the units, they were asking me, hey, do you have any movers, any moving company? And I was referring them to a bunch of different people, not getting paid. So then I put in place, I need to get a commission. So every time I refer them out to my partners that I have that have moving companies, now I got an additional stream of income coming in from referring it out. And then I said, let me take it a step further. I'm giving away a bunch of business. I called up a few of my cousins and had some of his friends start their own moving company. So now I have them doing the moving services for my facility. And now I have another stream, right? The next step that I took it to, I actually went out and got cargo vans. So now when people rent out the units, I offer them vans to be able to take their items back and forth. And then I also put a vending machine there. So as you're moving back and forth and you need a quick drink, you can actually get a quick drink, a quick snack. But these are all things that you could implement on the facility to generate more income. And the beautiful thing about commercial real estate is the value of your asset is based upon the net income. So the more income you bring in, the higher the value of the facility is. So you could take a $500,000 facility and turn it into a $1 million asset by implementing certain things. And now you can do a cash out refinance, pull that money out to go buy. If I do that one time per year, I'll be set versus, you know, chasing tenants and, you know, trying to find a bunch of deals every single day. And get up to, I come from that. I started out wholesaling, right? Cold calling, marketing, driving for dollars. So I understand that business, but I felt like I need to be able to work higher, work above the business. How could I make the most and squeeze the most juice out of the lemon?
Love it. Love it. And, you know, what I like about that is you started up talking about how you didn't understand that, you know, you should have some vacancy so that you can increase the rents and have a little bit of turnover. And you also mentioned that you didn't quite understand how the fluctuation of interest rates could impact what you had to pay back. And then you finished it off with talking about several income streams that you implemented after that. So I think it's important for people to understand that, because it wasn't like, woe is me, you know, the mortgage is going up. It's like, all right, let me learn and figure out how to add more streams to this business.
Absolutely. It's always about figuring out a way to pivot, because that's business. You can be up 1 year, 2 years, but that third year in business, you fail because you didn't see the market. You know, we look at Blockbuster, died because of Netflix, right? You think about, you know, Amazon that's crushing a lot of these mom and pop, you know, grocery stores and retail outlets. You got to get above the business and always think of how could I, you know, be sustainable 3 to 5, 10 years from now.
Definitely. And did you, when you sold off your property, did you sell everything? Did you keep any of the rental properties?
I kept some of the properties. So I sold off all of my smaller, like single families and duplexes. Anything above, anything less than 4 units, I sold. So I still have an 8-unit building. I have a few 6-unit buildings. I have small apartment buildings. So I kept those. But anything under 4 units, I let go of it.
Got it. So you mentioned, you know, you don't have to, you know, fix toilets and chase tenants and different things like that. How much, it sounds like you like the storage space a lot more than residential for those reasons. What would you say to somebody who is like debating between trying to do one versus the other and just consider some of the things that you do?
That's a great question. I'm biased. I'll be honest with you, right?
Let's hear it.
I'm biased because I've been in the residential space. I did it for 8 years. So I know what it's like to get a phone call at midnight saying that there's a leak in the water line and now they have no water and now there's no heat because the water is connected to the water heater. And they, you know, like, I didn't dealt with that. And now because it's people living in the units, I need to move with a sense of urgency, you know? So now I'm calling my contractors, my property managers, I'm waking them up, you know, they're trying to figure things out. And it was a headache. I felt like I picked up another job, you know? And now if there's any major issue, I don't need to move as urgent because there's nobody living there. It's just stuck, right? Right. So if there is something that happens where there's a leak or whatever the case may be, it's not where I got to move right away. I'm still going to get these things done, you know? So I love it because for me, it's not about money, right? It's more so about freedom. Like, how could I better use my time to spend with my family? How could I better use my time to have a better impact on my community? That's really what I got into the real estate business for. And now I seen there was a whole new world and outlet. So I'm going to always tell anybody starting out, go self-storage all the way. And you don't have to go big, right? You can buy, like one of my mentees purchased a 44-unit facility, you know, very small facility. She paid $350,000, something like that. And she started out and she got a small facility. So you could do the exact same thing like that. Then the other piece I will say, going through that process, it has helped me be successful in the self-storage space. So I don't want to discount anybody that's in the residential space because it's a lot of value and you can learn a lot. And one of the things that I did learn is that I needed to vet my tenants better, you know, because I was in low income areas where I was buying properties for cheap. And then I had what type of tenants in there, right? Low income tenants. So when they lose their job, they don't have reserves set to the side to keep their money going, right? They're paycheck to paycheck. So just understanding if I am in a residential space, how could I get better tenants, buy properties in better areas, you know, to make sure that if there is an economic downturn or crisis, the way things have happened, I still have a better chance of keeping my income coming in because of the type of business that I set up, you know, but that's the best way I could put it.
Yeah, no, I understand. That definitely makes sense. Yeah. And as far as funding, if someone is trying to get in the self-storage facility space, you know, I know there's the SBA loan opportunity. Are there any other creative financing ways to finance a self-storage facility? I mean, of course, you know, we know all the creative ways you can get into residential. What does that look like on the commercial storage facility side?
There's so many ways. So obviously you have the SBA 7A loan. You also have the SBA 504 loan, which is another type of loan, but the SBA 7A goes up to $5 million. After $5 million, you have to go to the 504, and that's up to $20 million. So it just depends on what level of experience you have when it comes to investing. You could actually do seller financing. So I actually done that as well, where I have the owner of the facility become the bank. You could do private money and raise capital between you and a group of friends, right? If you got somebody that have money in a 401k, it's right now the stock market taking a beat. And if you have money in a 401k, you lose it. So you rather take their money out and invest into assets. So you could raise money. You could use business lines of credit, business credit cards. So I get very creative when it comes to, you know, pulling the resources together to go out there and acquire the self-storage facilities.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. You mentioned like business credit cards. The majority of people lack discipline, quite frankly, and don't know how to utilize like those lines of credit or credit cards in a disciplined manner where they can service the debt. What advice do you have for somebody in that situation who maybe they can qualify and get all these credit cards and lines and stuff? Like, how can you do it in a way where you're not going to lose your shirt?
You hit it on the head. It's really about discipline, honestly. Like, you can't make somebody do something that they don't want to do. It's really about you understanding that this is debt at the end of the day, and you got to pay it back, and there's interest, and if you don't have a plan for it. So what I teach all of my mentees is that before you get funding, you need to have a funding plan. So I make sure that you put together a funding plan before we even take you through that process, because I don't want to be liable for getting you $150,000 and you're sitting on it and you're stuck and you now spend it in a club or buying things that don't make sense because the money is burning a hole in your pocket. I would always tell anybody starting out, you want to get a bookkeeping service. So you can sign up with Wave Apps. It's free, right? I signed up with Wave Apps, and then you can connect your credit cards to the app, and it could track all of the expenses. So wherever you're spending, because a lot of people mess up where they'll spend money on a credit card and forget when it's due, and now they got a late payment. There's a lot of things that happen. So you want to sign up with a bookkeeping service. I also set calendar invites. So whenever my credit cards are due, right? So it could, you know, let me know. I can always be on top of it. But the biggest thing is having a plan. So invest in mentorship, get some type of, you know, mentorship or education on how could you duplicate the money before you even thinking about getting it, because, you know, getting the money is the easiest part. I'm gonna be honest with you. It's really the hard part is how do you strategically invest it?
Definitely. That makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. So from that first 88 unit storage facility, were you able to acquire any additional ones?
Yeah, two more. I got two more. So 109 unit and 106 unit. And then right now, me and my mentee, we about to buy 103 unit. We got under contract right now. So we almost over 300 units right now in self storage.
Gotcha. Dope. Are those the last two in Pennsylvania?
No. So I have one in Arkansas, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are like, yo, why the hell you buy something in Arkansas? What's happening? Crazy. Well, you'd be surprised, right? I Googled the top five most moved to cities in 2020. Mm. Arkansas was number three. So in the self-storage business, you want to buy facilities where people are moving to. You want to get ahead of the curve, because when people are moving in, they obviously are relocating and they need to store items in the unit. They need to utilize these services while they're getting, you know, transition. Because the cost of living is going up. And if you don't have enough money it's tough to survive in LA. It's tough to survive in New York City. It's tough to survive in a lot of these states if you don't have the income to match. So the next best thing is to go to these submarkets, these other cities that is cheaper to live. And that's what's happening. So that's why I bought one in Arkansas, and the other one is in Tennessee. So PA, Arkansas, Tennessee. And then I just get, you know, a management company in place to assist me with the day-to-day, and we go from there.
Love it. And I love what you mentioned about those trends, because a lot of people follow those trends for like residential, but it makes perfect sense why you would follow those kind of trends for the storage facility side, I mean, you know, it's public information where people are moving. So I think that's an easy tip anybody can use as they're looking into storage facilities.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us more about the deal in Arkansas. Did you use the SBA again? Was it any type of seller financing or creative financing or anything? Talk to us about just what you saw in the facility and, you know, how you took it
yeah,
forward.
So I did SBA on that one as well. It was $650,000 for that facility. So we came to the table with about $80,000. So this is the cool thing that I want to put out there for everybody that's listening, right? I have what I call a family legacy meeting every single year. So everybody said, what the hell is a family legacy meeting? Well, I bring my aunts, my cousins, my brothers, my sisters, my wife, her family. I make sure everybody come together and we get in one room and we teach financial literacy. And I have some qualifications in place before you can even show up to the meeting. Number one, you got to make sure that you have an LLC created before you even show up to the meeting. And number two, I send you a link to get your credit reports pulled so that we can see your credit profile when you show up to the meeting. Now I look at everybody's credit profile and then I want to see who has the best credit score so I could put you on my LLC and we could go get you funding. And then we just rotated. So we have what we call like a SUSU. So every month we'll put everybody put up $200 and it will take the pot and we'll use it towards helping somebody get better, right? So this month we'll fix auntie's credit because she's in the 500s. Next month we'll fix my brother's credit, right? So we'll use the money every month to push somebody forward in their financial journey. But I checked my cousin's credit. He's a correction officer. He works 60 hours a week. All he knows is work and pay his bills. But he doesn't understand strategy and credit and investments. We checked his credit profile. He had an 800 credit score. Didn't even know. It was crazy. Wow. He didn't even know he had an 800 credit score. He just paid his bills on time. So then I said, okay, how about I show you how to go turn your credit into cash? I put him on my LLC as a member and I got him $45,000 in 24 hours. He was jumping through the roof, right? So then at that point, I structured his business up the right way, got him $250,000. But now he's a private lender in my deals. So that $80,000 that I needed to bring to the table for that facility in Arkansas, my cousin actually gave me the $80,000 because I already got him funded for his own business. So now I'm raising money for my family and we go buy facilities and I just give you a percentage of the profits and some equity in it. And that's how I pretty much create my own private fund. And I like to share this because we think in order to go buy a big asset, we need to go and raise money from a bunch of people out there in the world. Or no, it could start in your household. You just have to have the information. So I like to share that. But that's how I, you know, got the money to buy it. And then now that right now we're working on getting it fully occupied. It's about 90%. It's at 60% occupancy right now because it was mismanaged. So the previous owner, he had another business, which was a car wash. And I think he had a car wash and a restaurant, something, two other businesses. That was taking so much of his time that he wasn't even marketing his facility, didn't have a website. Nobody knew about the facility. He was collecting payments in cash, you know? Wow. Like, so, you know, so now we just converting the systems over, getting everybody to pay electronically, getting everybody on auto pay, you know, getting the website set up. So that's what we're in the process of really just making sure we take the facility online, right? We get it digital, automated. And then once it gets to that 90% occupancy, now I can move on to the next facility, but I don't like moving on until, you know, I get this project completely set up the right way.
Makes a lot of sense, man. I got a bunch of questions on that. yeah. So for that deal, did you find it on LoopNet or did you find it some other way?
No, that was actually a wholesaler. So I have, so this is another thing that I do, right? And I'm giving you a lot of, living a lot of games. So y'all better.
That's a fact.
This podcast out. I give out referral fees to my property managers, my contractors, my bankers, appraisers, inspectors, anybody that pretty much works in the real estate space. I let them know, hey, if you have anybody that's looking to sell, I'm going to give you $1,000 referral fee if we close. So now I always have people just calling me because like they say opportunities are coming up. So this wholesaler found that opportunity and they reached out to me and let me know they had this deal. Obviously, I paid a fee in between, but that's how I was able to get that.
Love it. Love it. And it's interesting. You mentioned that it's mismanaged and, you know, there's a lot of upside and I could see the connection from investing in residential real estate because a lot of times investors are trying to buy depressed assets or underperforming assets, you know, get them performing, get the value up and all those things. So I see that. I see that parallel and how that skill set transitioned to the self-storage space.
Yeah. It's the same approach, bro. I just, we get it. We get so like caught up in our head, but it's literally the same approach. Just like you said, it's just that this is a house where tenants live there. And this is the facility where tenants just rent out the unit to store their items. But we're still looking at it as a business.
Definitely. Definitely. And you mentioned the family business meeting, which I think is incredible. And, you know, Marvin should probably should be doing that. Was it hard to get everybody on board with that structure and doing that? Like, talk to us about what that experience was like and just trying to get people on the same page.
Bruh, it's a task. You know what I'm saying? It's a task to get everybody on board. It took me some time, right? Even my grandfather, right? So that very first deal that I talked to you about earlier, you know, I went to my family and friends first, and everybody had excuses. Nobody had the money. And my grandfather, I love him, but he told me that I was starting too big. He said, this deal is too big for you. Start small, you know, and if I would listen to him, I wouldn't be where I am today. So sometimes it'd be the closest people to you. They love you. It's just that they don't understand where you're going, you know? So I had to go and be the representation. So once I came back to the hood and I showed a $157,000 check, like, yeah, look, y'all, that's when the eyeballs start opening up and they start, okay, you know, and then I started building my online brand. So a lot of family and friends, they see me on Facebook and see a bunch of people comment and see like, no, wow, this guy really, he's doing something, right? And because I did that, now everybody started to believe in me, right? So it's just three principles that I always break down. Number one is the information. So we got to make sure that we're experts in the field. Number two is integrity. So following through on what you said, no matter what. Because if somebody tell you, hey, this not going to work, and you just let them tell you that, they're never going to believe in you. And then the last thing is influence. Because you have information, integrity, and influence, now you could go and bring your family together because they actually seen that you've done it. You know what? You know, our people, seeing is believing. Like, if they don't see it, they ain't believing it. I'm just being real with you.
Yeah, definitely. For the Arkansas property, was that something you did remotely or did you actually have an opportunity to go out and visit? Is that part of your process to like see things for yourself?
Yeah, I went out there. I went out there twice to go walk through the property, check out the area, drive around. I always do that. I always want to make sure I put my feet on the ground, you know, just to make sure that, because it's something that I use Google Earth to scope out the area and kind of really get an understanding of, all right, is there a Walmart up the street? You know, where is the nearest school? Where's the nearest church? I want to see what's happening. But then when I get it under contract, I go out there physically. Yeah.
Got it. That makes sense. That makes sense. And then you said the third one is in Tennessee. Is that right?
Tennessee. Yeah.
Gotcha. So how'd you find that deal and what kind of, was it SBA? Was it a different strategy?
No, so that one, I did seller financing on that one. And that one was through my system. So I use a platform, it's called Off Market Self Storage, right? And you go in there and you could actually find motivated owners, right? You could filter out your list and you could find people who own facilities, how long they've owned it, get their phone numbers and call, right? So I have my virtual assistants, they'll do cold calling every single day and they end up reaching out to this one owner operator, super tired. Him and his wife was going through a divorce and ready to sell, right? So with him, I offered the seller financing because it was just a sticky thing. He wanted to move fast. He wanted to get his wife out of the business. So I gave him it was like $70,000. I gave him something like around a little under $70,000 that I gave him down. And he was able to give that money to his wife just to get out, right? But now I just pay him monthly. I pay him monthly until we got a 3-year agreement where I'm paying him out the full amount. So that's, I got that last year, May. So I probably got about a year and a half left to pay him out the full balance at a 4% interest rate that I'm paying him back on. But right now, my plan for that facility, I have U-Haul that works out of that facility and they give me 30% commissions of everything that they do. I'm working on expanding as well to add another 40 units. So after I get all of that done, that facility, I paid $900,000 for, at least that's the agreement, $900,000, but it's going to be worth over $2 million, which is completely done. And then I'll be able to refinance and pay him out. But for him, it worked out because he just wanted to get his wife off his back because she was complaining, oh, you know, divorce. So here goes $70,000, get out the way. And then you don't got to manage the business. I'm going to pay you monthly. Just give me a good 3 years and then I'll be able to pay you out completely.
Gotcha. Gotcha. You mentioned you're planning to add units onto there.
Yeah. Planning to expand. So there's a lot next door that I bought that came with the facility. So that was his plan. The seller, he was planning to do expansion, just never got to it. So now we're adding additional 40 units right next door, which that's just more opportunity for us to rent out and get more income and grow the facility.
Got you. How long do you think that process will take to add on those 40 additional units?
Right now, we're still in the process. It's been about a year now, to be honest.
Wow.
And the problem is because I'm new to that market, so I don't have a lot of resources, right? If that was in Pennsylvania, I would get it done in 6 months because I already have a strong enough team. I got good relationships with the county. We could pull titles, permits. Versus out there, I don't have a strong, I guess, relationships and resources, so it's taking a lot longer than normal. Because I went through a bunch of contractors that said they could do it and was giving me crazy prices and, you know, starting a job. So it's probably going to take me another 6 months to a year, to be honest with you. I'm hoping to get it done before the term is up, you know, so I can refinance and pay him out. But that's where I'm at currently.
Yeah, we're going to have you come back once that's done and talk about stores, facilities and development.
That's a fact. Absolutely.
Man. So what does the future look like in addition to, you know, getting that development going? Like, are you looking to expand? I know earlier you mentioned, you know, trying to buy one per year. And it sounds like you've pretty much been able to do that over the last couple of years. What else do you want to do within the storage facility space?
So my goal is to pretty much exit in the next 5 years and sell to the big REITs and hedge funds. So when you think about public storage, Extra Space, CubeSmart, Life Storage, right? Those are the big dogs. And they buying up the facilities and they want the facilities turnkey. So my goal is to get the small mom and pop facilities, build it up to this top value, they cash out to those big hedge funds that's not worried about penny pinching. They just gonna pay whatever price because they got the money as long as it's a return on the investment. And once I cash out, then I want to become a lender completely, right? Because to be completely honest, and I keep it all the way real.
Yeah.
You really don't own an asset until you own it outright. Yes, you can control it, but the bank owns the asset if you have a mortgage on that, right? So I want to get to the point where I could help other investors coming up and they don't need to always go to the bank. We can be our own bank. So, you know, through different vehicles like life insurance that I have set up and different policies, I'm just loading it up. So 5 to 7 years from now, I can sit back and be like, okay, we got 30 million sitting. I want to go help a bunch of investors get started. And now I'm the lender for the community and getting everybody going. That's like the ultimate goal.
I love it. And one thing I noticed is that seems to be a trend and it's going to continue is that you're not afraid to pivot. You had a point during the pandemic when you decided to sell a number of your units to transition into storage facilities. Mm-hmm. And your goal down the line is to, you know, get those businesses running, get the values of those up and cash out and pivot again. So I think there's a lot of value in that. You know, people should understand, you know, you can always reinvent yourself and it's always important to look towards what's next. Like what's the ultimate goal? You know, you could stay within it and have those facilities for 20, 30 years if you want, but you have a goal to pivot again to something else where you can ultimately help others, you know, invest in storage facilities and things like that. So I think that's something that I really want people to understand too.
That's a great highlight. And I learned this because one of my mentors that's in the self-storage space, he said, he told me he make $10,000 a day in interest on his money. And when he told me that, I just said, what the hell? $10,000 a day on his money, meaning that he don't have to lift a finger. He's not chasing tenants. He's not out running into properties. He's not managing facilities. He's just the lender. So that's really what gave me that inspiration. He's the lender. And he's getting paid interest on his money. And that is where I want to be, where I could be on the beach with my family, spending time, you know, sipping a nice margarita. And I don't got to worry about the actual operation of that type of business, right? All I really have to worry about is making sure that I lend out to credible investors. I'm helping them out, giving them opportunities. But my money is making money. And that is the business that I want to be.
Definitely. Man. This has been a jam-packed interview. I'm about to get on that right now. Start looking for some storage facilities, man. Is there anything else you want to leave with the people? You've a whole lot of game. I mean, after this interview, y'all can at least take step one to figuring this thing out. Is there anything else you want to leave with the people regarding self-storage facilities in investing in general?
What I really want to say is more motivational, right? And I want to let everybody know that's listening, the most powerful thing in the world is a made-up mind, right? Our lifestyle is our mindset turned inside out. So whatever we think, whatever we speak is what we will see. And I share that because, you know, I never in a million years thought that I would be here. I'm 30 years old, $4 million empire, you know, coach, trained thousands of people all over the world. And I'm just getting started, right? I'm a new father. You know, and my son is amazing. Bro. He doesn't even know it. Thank you. Right. But these are just things that I'll be having to pinch myself sometimes. And it's because I was mad enough about my situation. And when I say mad, it means make a decision. Right. I had to make a decision to become somebody completely different. I had to get away from the bad and negative people. I had to really say, this is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to stick to it no matter what comes with it. I'm going to stick to it. I'm going to follow through. So just hearing that, I want you to have that mindset as you go into the self-storage business, because it's not going to be easy. And let's just be completely real. People that look like us is a small percentage of that business. So they're not going to make it easier for us to enter this market. So we got to make sure that we're equipped with the information, equipped with the right resources, and understand that as power in what we think, what we say, and what we see. But that's what I want to share.
Love it. Love it. And how can people tap in with you? Follow what you have going on, get involved in everything you have going on. Where's the best place to reach you and find all that good stuff?
You can find me on Instagram. That's mogul_lifestyle. So that's mogullifestyle _ mogul lifestyle. There's a bunch of fakes out there that scamming. And listen, there's only one _ at the end of my page. You can also go to my YouTube, Mogul Elite Club, always dropping game on YouTube. But what I want to do as well, if this is good with you, I want to give everybody an opportunity to spend 6 days with me, right? So everybody that's listening, I want to give you an opportunity to spend 6 days with me where I'm going to teach you how to get access to SBA loans. I'm going to teach you how to get business credit cards, business lines of credit, how to set your profile up, how to clean your credit. And once you do that, how to properly invest it, right? How to invest it into self-storage. How to find, how to evaluate, how to acquire, how to manage, how to raise capital, how to scale it from 1 million to 2 million. I'm going to teach this during a 6-day class that I'm having. It's called my Cash Flow Bootcamp. So I want to, I'll get with you. I'll get you the link. You could drop the link. It's only $297 for everybody that's tapped in here today. But that's what I want to do. That's cool with you.
We'll have that link ready. We'll have that link ready.
Let's do it. It's all dope. That's what we're going to do. Yep.
Love it. Love it. Or Ramel, thank you so much, man, for jumping on the show. I learned a whole lot. I know the audience is going to get a whole lot of value out of it and learn about a new investing strategy. You know, you're the first guest we've had in all these 100-some episodes who invest in startup facilities. So it's a first for us. And so I'm excited to put this out and, you know, add some value to the people.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And then, you know, once I get this facility up and going in Tennessee, we document that process. We're going to swing back around because I'm all about building relationships. I like what you've been doing and building up this platform. So I always like to come back and build strong relationships to help out. So that's what we're going to make that happen.
That's a fact. Right? That's a fact. Appreciate that, man. And thank you to everybody for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Subscribe, leave us a rating, leave us a review. Looking forward to hearing from you all soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast. That's BRED Podcast. Until next time.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.